Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign with crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the January 18 edition of Commodity Week. Markets rallied this week. It feels odd. We'll find out why today on Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Later in this half hour, we'll talk with Standard Grain's Joe Vaclavic from Chicago, Illinois. Our panelists today in studio include Greg Johnson of the Andersons from right here in Champaign County, Bill Mayer of Strategic Farm Marketing from Champaign, Illinois, and Chuck Shelby of Risk Management Commodities out of West Lafayette, Indiana.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM, now providing a new mobile site, FarmerView, for up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids. Available at ADM.com/FarmerView.
Agricultural programming is a production of Illinois Public Media. A reminder that the markets are closed. Martin Luther King Jr. birthday. Our panelists in studio again are Greg Johnson of the Andersons, Bill Mayer of Strategic Farm Marketing, and Chuck Shelby of Risk Management Commodities. Let's open today's discussion with this question. Understanding, Greg, the USDA lowered, of course, the carryout for corn to just above 600 million bushels. It still seems prudent to be a bit uneasy about these high commodity prices. What's your assessment?
Well, anytime you have the carryout this low, a little bit of demand that's not expected or a little bit of a cutback in demand can move the prices quite a bit. So, you know, as we approach this 740, 750 level on March futures, the old crop corn is going to be rewarded probably with some sales by farmers unless they want to hold on to it into the summer. So we're going to have to keep an eye on ethanol demand, which we've seen plateau and probably start to lose a little bit. You know, will exports go down a little bit? But the biggest question is, what will the feeders do? You know, what price does it take for these feeders to start to liquidate some herds? Because that's what probably it's going to take to make sure that we finish the year with a minimal amount of corn in the pipeline.
Chuck Shelby?
I think what the USDA stated was we haven't really rationed demand yet. So in our mindset, that gives a market opportunity to go up. But again, there are tools out there to manage this risk and lay the risk off somewhere else at a known cost. So that's our suggestion, is take advantage of it, but lay off the risk.
Bill Mayer.
I think that excellent points by both these guys. And the market does have to, that's what the government told us, was that the market does have some more rationing to do. One of the arguments that I heard this week that I think has a lot of merit is, now does the market have to ration it here in the United States, which means probably you're going to do that with bases, or do we need to ration it globally, which probably means that you're going to do it with the futures market? I guess I tend to kind of believe that it may be the bases part of it may do most of the work there. So I think, you know, there's limited downside on old crop corn, but I think that, you know, depending on your inventory and how you need to manage your risk, we've been, you know, whittling some of that down here on these prices as we moved up here.
It would seem, Greg, that Bill makes a good point that rationing would have to come someplace. The export market looks like it's already done most of what it possibly can do, at least by USDA's numbers.
Yeah, and I agree with him, too, that you're going to see a lot of the basis do the work. You know, already, you know, even though we've seen some lower bids immediately after fall harvest as farmers moved this corn because they didn't want to store it because of aflatoxin concerns. Now we're starting to see basis levels pick back up again, and it's only January. So if basis levels are already 30, 40 over in January, you know, where might they be, you know, come this summer?
Can you divvy up the livestock sector for me, please, Chuck? This week, Cargill said there aren't enough beef animals in Texas to run a plant. They're laying off 2,000 workers indefinitely at that plant. So the beef producers look like they have taken the brunt of this, but pork numbers and poultry numbers aren't as low as you might expect.
I think that's correct. And I think one place we look at the cattle to carry that on just a bit, the western states are extremely dry. If that dry pattern continues into next year, that could be a place where we really do cut off some feed utilization as those guys really do liquidate. So that's a danger point out there for corn. I think the hog guys are at a point here where they've learned to deal with this. They're able to make a little bit of money. Producers in the hogs and the poultry industry anymore are pretty much the guys that are there. They're not going to go away.
Yeah, I would agree with that, and I think part of the reason for that is the pork and poultry are more in the business of selling pork and poultry, not necessarily selling hogs or chickens, where the cattle guys are still kind of independent from the processing side of it from an integration standpoint. But, you know, I think we have to look, too, at that plant closure down there in Texas, that was probably their most inefficient plant. So from a company management standpoint, that probably makes sense.
Corn futures this week had a high in the March contract at $7.35. It's low, 7.13 on the overnight and day trade, which are all one and the same to some extent at this point, including the electronic and open outcry. Settlement price for the week was up 18¾ cents from the previous Friday at $7.27.5. December futures at $5.90.5, a gain of 13.5 cents. Do you suppose, Greg, that $6 futures in the December is any time in the near future?
If it is, we should take advantage of it. I still think we want to differentiate between old crop corn and new crop corn. Old crop corn is extremely tight, and we're going to have to ration it out, whereas new crop corn, as we heard this week, we could plant as many as 99 million acres of corn. And if you use any kind of a normal yield or even a little bit sub-trend line yield, that's still 14 billion bushels of corn, which we go from shortage to surplus by next fall. Now, I know people will say it's dry out west, and I agree it is, but when will we know that we have a problem? You know, probably not until July or August. So in the meantime, we've got 5 months that we cannot prove that we're hurting the new crop corn supply. So I think new crop corn is going to struggle to follow up the old crop corn. Old crop corn is very strong. I agree with Bill and Chuck, but this new crop corn, we have to be ready to sell if it gets to $6.
Chuck, one of the things the United States Department of Agriculture has been harping on for the last year or so is the usage of wheat for feeding processes. Again, this week, wheat was up 36.5 cents at $7.91¼ in the March. July at $8.04, up 37.5 cents. It's dry, as you mentioned, way out west. There won't be wheat to feed there, and it doesn't appear that it's in really good shape around the rest of the planet. Can you bring that into what the feed market or coarse grains, including corn, might look like?
Well, I think that's another positive for the corn market. I think part of the wheat market, too, we're going to have some extremely cold temperatures here in the eastern corn belt that wheat's exposed, so a possibility of winter kill. But I think you could also combine that and go back to the acres. 99 million acres of corn, if it stays dry into spring, will those western guys plant that corn? The wheat acres may get torn up or planted to something else, but you're not going to plant corn in a drought area. So first of all, I guess we would hesitate to think that 99 million acres are really realistic at this point in time.
I want to take a different tact with you on acres and come at it from the crop insurance standpoint, for corn, that is. We're not into February yet. That'll be when we set the crop insurance numbers. But the three-year phase-in USDA RMA is using for premiums will lower premiums for a good part of really good regions in the state of Illinois, for instance, the upper two-thirds of the corn of the state, which is good property, lower risk for corn production, will have lower premiums this year than they did last. But the lower third, or those areas that are outside of the primary production regions that we think about will have higher premiums. Will that keep them from planting corn?
I think part of that's going to depend, of course, Todd, on where the February price comes in. And when we say lower premiums, we have to understand that last year we had a $5.68 price. You know, if we have a $6 price, that we may actually have higher total cost of premium, although the rate has been lowered, you know, in Illinois, for example. If we have $6 levels, let's just say, for example, we're about $5.90 now on the futures, I think that that still gives you plenty of profitability, even in those lower two-thirds of the states that you were referring to, and with some higher premiums, that they're still going to plant corn, because just from the economic standpoint, it looks like to me that's still the best choice of different commodities when you look at it.
In the lower third of Illinois, you mean?
Well, yeah, or the lower parts where you have the higher premiums coming out. Yeah.
Or even across the entire Midwest, right?
Across the Midwest.
Yeah, and then into the Dakotas as well, because the fringe areas, of course, and fringe is a difficult thing to say at this point, but those areas that have a higher risk.
Now, the $99 million, I think you also have to consider there that you're bringing in some new ground that may not have the ability to have proven yields on it like you've got on some of the ground that's been planted to corn recently. I think that may be a little bit more of a problem from the standpoint of whether the insurance gives them enough guarantee to go ahead and get that corn planted.
Soybeans for the week, March contract at $14.48 top, bottom at $13.76.5. The settlement price there at $14.29.25, a gain this week in the beans of 56 cents. November soybeans at $12.92.25 were up 26 cents. That seems a little odd as we enter the month, end of the month of January and February, and we're really thinking, or at least beginning to think, about some soybeans harvested in South America.
That's true, and a few have been harvested. The problem is going to be physically loading out that many beans in a short period of time. I mean, the logistics, on paper, it can happen, but logistically, everything is going to have to work just right. And if you really need the beans, do you take a chance on a boat sitting there for, who knows, 2-3 weeks before you can get it loaded, or do you buy beans out of the United States? And so it's going to be extremely, extremely tight, and people that are trying to buy March beans and take delivery, maybe March is good, maybe it's not. March is going to be very volatile.
Two things in that point. Is there time, do you think, still for beans in the United States to lead, domestic, I suppose? And what's your assessment of the South American crop, Argentina and Brazil?
Well, I think Brazil is in pretty good condition down there, but Argentina started out wet and now they're dry, and they're the third leading producer of soybeans in the world. So when they have some issues, it affects the market. I think the market took a look at that this week. The other factor is you got China. China cancels, buys, and it makes it confusing, I think, to the market to try to get a handle on what they're really going to do.
Two things. I think one is that we did have some pretty good sized growing areas in South America that got planted late. So I think there is a delay there compared to a normal harvest. And that's one reason that we did see some, or may see some, switching back to the United States even. But quite simply, I think we're in a weather market right now on the soybean side of it. And it's similar to August here. And if we get a rain, Monday evening is going to be a different story than it is if we continue to come in and look at a ridge building in Brazil.
There have been a couple of years where farmers have looked at the prices at this time of year and said, hey, wait a second, that might be something I need to sell for new crop, especially for corn, but for both corn and soybeans. Is this a year they will get burnt at that point? And I know it depends all on the weather, but maybe it's a better idea to say, is it still a good idea to sell earlier rather than later at these high commodity prices? And we'll poll everybody.
Well, the odds would say it's a good thing to sell ahead this year. The price is higher right now than it has been the previous 2 years. It looks like we're going to have the highest crop insurance price ever. So the law of averages says if this is the highest price we've seen in January and February, we probably should be selling some new crop corn and beans. And I understand it's hot and dry, and if we have another dry summer, everybody will say, what do you mean by selling corn ahead and selling beans ahead? But, you know, all you can do at this point, not knowing what the weather is going to be like this summer, is play the odds and get some corn and beans sold ahead at what has historically been very good levels.
I think the revenue is certainly there. Each farmer has to look at his individual situation, but there are tools out there. That's the advantage of this industry we have. There's tools where you can lock that in and yet remain flexible. I think that's the thing farmers need to do.
I would agree with that. I think the revenues look really good, but I think just from a prudence standpoint, you have to use some kind of option strategy to give yourself some upside potential in case you do go into the spring and summer dry like we did last year.
Well, you're listening to Commodity Week at Martin Luther King Jr. weekend, and the markets are closed on Monday. Just a couple of things you might be able to do during that day. We will have a Will Ag Outlook panel at 11:30 Eastern Time in Remington, Indiana at the library there. Bill Gentry from Risk Management Commodities will be there, along with Chris Hurt from Purdue and Steve Erbman of EFG. And then on the 23rd in the evening at the Pontiac, they'll be at the Elks Club. Bill Gentry will be there, along with Mike Zuzulo and Jackie Vakes. That's part of programming content that comes to you from willag.org. You can find all that information on our website. Just look under the calendars tab. Back in 2 minutes when we'll talk with Joe Vaklovic of Standard Grain.
I'm meteorologist Ed Kieser with a look at the weather for corn and soybean production in South America. In Argentina, a dramatic change in the weather pattern continued this week as high pressure is now firmly anchored over the region. That means dry weather now dominates after many months of soaking rains. As mentioned last week, dry weather in the short term is beneficial for Argentina's crops as the ground is plenty moist. Longer term, I do have concerns about Argentina staying too dry. Computer models show high pressure remaining in control with little or no rain for the major corn and soybean areas of Argentina in the coming week, and only low chances of significant rainfall during the last week of January. The bottom line for Argentina, decent rainfall will be needed around the 1st of February, or serious issues due to dryness will evolve. At least temperatures are expected to remain seasonably cool through the middle of next week before heat potentially evolves in western areas later in the week. To the north, across South Brazil and Paraguay, the weather also turned drier this week after heavy rainfall during prior weeks. Winds also continue to blow off of the Atlantic Ocean, holding temperatures down, benefiting crops that have made the reproductive stage. Seasonable coolness will last into at least the middle of next week, but with little or no rainfall. Computer models have been showing rain arriving in South Brazil and Paraguay with a front on about Friday, January 25th. Farther north, across center-west and southeast Brazil and Bahia, scattered thunderstorms occurred during the past week. Rainfall for the past month has been several inches below average, but seasonable rainfall benefiting crops is expected across most of Mato Grosso, Goiás, Minas Gerais, and Bahia in the coming weeks. That will benefit crops in that part of Brazil. That is your South American weather update for Commodity Week. I'm meteorologist Ed Kieser.
Support for Commodity Week comes from Agrigold Hybrids, featuring the Agrigold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgrigoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM, now providing a new mobile site, FarmerView, for up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids. Available at ADM.com/FarmerView.
This is Commodity Week, the January 18 edition. I'm Todd Gleason. Our panelists in studio include Chuck Shelby of Risk Management Commodities out of Lafayette, Indiana, Bill Mayer of Strategic Farm Marketing from Champaign, Illinois, and Greg Johnson of the Andersons from right here in Champaign County. Joe Vaklovic of Standard Grain out of Chicago, Illinois, on the phone line to take a look at the futures markets with us. Good afternoon to you, Joe.
Good Good afternoon. Good to be back on the show.
Well, let's hear about the feelings in Chicago. Those that are in the CME Group building, the Chicago Board of Trade there, are they comfortable with these high prices still, and do they think that they can last very long through the 2013 year?
It seems to me that the report that the USDA put out last week has a lot of traders believing that the downside in this corn market, especially old crop contracts, is limited. That feed number that we saw last week, 300 million bushel increase, was very, very substantial. So I think that kind of tells you that, you know, corn below $7 is a buy for the livestock guy. Now, that may have changed this week with the big break in cattle prices. But overall, yeah, I think the feeling is kind of positive here for these old crop corn contracts. Now, on the other end of that, as you guys were talking about earlier, new crop corn has been under some pressure here. We rallied back a little bit this week. But the disparity between old crop fundamentals and new crop fundamentals is pretty substantial here. 99.3 million acres was the number Informa put out today. Some people have a tough time believing that, but that's kind of what the market's playing with right now.
Joe, the funds, big hedge funds and index funds, started getting out of this market late in 2012, early in 2013. Now we're starting to see a little bit of a return. Where do you think the funds are? What are they looking at when they're making their investment decisions?
Well, I think that, you know, it's so difficult these days to tell who's doing what in the markets. But I think just like the rest of us, everyone's looking at weather and weather in South America, weather in the U.S., the drought situation, especially west of the Mississippi River and in the plains, weather is really going to dictate what these markets do the next, you know, 6 months to a year, whether we like it or not. I mean, you know, we can sit here and analyze this stuff and look at these USDA reports, but it's going to all come down to rainfall, both in South America and here in the U.S., you know, this coming year. And I think that that's the most important thing out there for us or a bank or a hedge fund or whoever it may be.
Will the wheat become the springtime bull market as we go forward with the dry conditions and poor quality of the western wheat?
Well, you know, we generally have a seasonal tendency here in the market for the corn market to actually gain on wheat from now essentially through the end of March. Now, I know that the weather is certainly a friendly input for the wheat market. The USDA gave us some friendly numbers on, you know, last Friday. I still kind of think from a technical perspective, the wheat market looks like we're really just a rally in a bear market right now as far as I'm concerned. You know, it's something we're competitive with corn. It's obvious that wheat's being fed. But until we see some positive things as far as the market's concerned, you know, get this March Chicago contract up above $8 or $8.25 and change some of the things that have been going on, you know, as far as the actual trend in the market goes, I think you got to be kind of cautious of this wheat.
Joe, as we talked about earlier with the good profitability that farmers are looking at now, looking at new crop, what's your take on going ahead and setting some prices in here on this new crop corn and beans?
I think as of right now, in regards to these 13 corn, you've got to imagine that we're probably within an earshot of where that February crop insurance price is going to be. Each of the last 3 years, it is not paid to sell ahead. Being a proactive marketer has not been the best strategy as we put in highs, you know, in late summer, early fall. But, yeah, you know, any year now could be the year that we have good weather and we finally get that 160, 165 yield. So, you know, right now, this week, with February coming up and the crop insurance deal coming up, I'm not a big fan of really pricing a whole lot here. I think you wait and see what the crop insurance deal does, kind of get the lay of the land as far as that whole situation is concerned. And that'll give you a little bit more, you know, willingness to go ahead and pull the trigger on some sales. Now, what you got to realize with these 13 corn is that I believe that the market is going to act as if we're going to have a big crop until we have a problem. We saw that situation last year. The East 12 corn contract from January 1st up until the drought hit in mid-May, you know, grinded from the high 590s down to $5. We're seeing the same situation right now with the beans. You know, the beans have seen a nice short covering rally here this week, but that whole break was predicated on the idea that we're going to have a big crop out of South America long before the stuff was even planted. So my fear here in the East 13 corn is that we're going to follow that same pattern, that we're going to grind this thing lower until we have a weather problem next year. If you don't have a weather problem, you might be out of luck. So short term here, I don't like doing a whole lot. Long term, I have a lot of concerns there.
Joe, I believe you're positioned to have a good pulse on the Asian market. Are they concerned very much about the lack of corn in the United States? I know they've turned to other places, of course, for their imports. Are they concerned, and the question really is, enough to avoid the United States in the future, or will it just simply be the default again next season?
Well, the big question here the last month and a half has been this situation on the Mississippi River. You know, what kind of supplies, physical supplies, would these importers be able to procure with the problems on the river? You know, barges running at half capacity, low river levels. Now, we caught some rains here in some of these real important parts of the river down in Illinois, as much as 3 or 5 inches in some areas, which I think really improved things. So I wouldn't honestly be surprised to see a return to export demand a little bit down the road here, especially if that river situation improves. I think that the whole problem with the river was underestimated quite a bit by the market in regards to export demand.
Joe, in Washington, the President and Congress have agreed to delay the fiscal cliff talks until the end of February now, and then we have the debt limit ceiling in the meantime. If we cannot get something worked out, if we go to the very end, does that get the market nervous again and cause any kind of a panic sell?
Well, stock market made new highs today, so I'm not in the camp that we're going to have a panic sell off a debt ceiling deal or a debt issue as of right now. If you get the Dow and the S&P to start to sell off because of that and things are looking ugly, then I'll change my tune. But right now, when you've got, you know, new high closes in the Dow and the S&Ps today, I'm not going to go that way just yet.
Joe, the USDA lowered the exports to some of the lowest levels in over 40 years. Do you see that as realistic, and do you see the potential for there to be more exports down the road?
It's sure realistic for corn. I mean, we saw the export data every Thursday morning for the last several months, and it was awful. In regards to soybeans, I think it's a totally different scenario. I think it's a situation where China is essentially hedging the South American crop by buying or making these sales out of the U.S. What these guys are doing is making sure that they're going to be able to get the beans from one place or another. And if we have a big South American crop, I'll all but guarantee you that you see some more big soybean cancellations.
Joe, I kind of took it, or my take on things this week was that the market was starting to get a little bit nervous about the weather in South America. When do you think we'll be comfortable with a South American crop, I mean, time-wise?
Well, like you said, I mean, this weather thing, especially in Argentina and some of the southern portions of Brazil, could change very quickly. There's a chance for some rain in the system this January 28th or 31st time frame. You know, you could see a reaction as early as Tuesday, in my opinion. But it seems like right now the majority of the crop, you know, we're talking about Brazil here for the most part, is in good shape. As a matter of fact, the USDA did up their estimate for Brazilian bean production up to 82.5 million metric tons, and most private analysts have followed that lead, raising their estimates gradually over the last couple of weeks. But, yeah, I mean, this could turn into a weather market just like any other year. I don't think we're there yet. We've got a minor threat right now that could turn into something more serious.
Joe Vaclavic is with Standard Grain out of Chicago, Illinois. Joe, thanks for taking the time with us today.
Thank you very much, guys. Have a great weekend.
Let's take time now for a final word from our panelist in studio, Greg Johnson of the Andersons.
Well, producers in our areas have very little new crop corn and beans sold, probably less than 5%, and normally we're probably 30 to 35% sold at this time of year. So I would urge producers to maybe make a few flat price sales to get up to that 25% level if we can see a little bit more of a rally next week.
Chuck Shelby of Risk Management.
I think it's going to be a very volatile year as we go forward. We can swing this corn market significantly higher if the weather is dry. We could swing it significantly lower if we have a great crop.
And Bill Mayer.
There's a lot of meetings coming up here. As Todd had mentioned earlier, we have a lot of meetings coming up, and I think it's well worth it to attend some of those, sit down, look at what the profitability looks like and what some strategies might be to try to address this new crop.
Bill Mayer, of course, is with Strategic Farm Marketing. I'm sure you can find a list of their meetings on their website and our meetings as well on our website at willag.org. Thanks to Bill Mayer and Chuck Shelby and Greg Johnson. That wraps up this January 18 edition of Commodity Week. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Find us online at willag.org.